It's Monday, November 10th, and we have been looking at the topic of diligently seeking God. This is session number 9 of diligently seeking God. And our key verse that we started with was Hebrews 11:6, which says, "But without faith it is impossible to please him. For he that cometh to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him." Okay? So we're interested in seeking God. We know the rewards will come. Okay? The rewards will come as we seek him. We're not seeking the rewards themselves. We're seeking God. And then we allow God to reward us as he sees fit. Because we've seen that he's very loving and kind and generous. And all we need to do is seek his will, seek his presence, seek his face. And we have as an example of this Abraham, and we've been looking at Abraham for the past few weeks because there's so much written about him. And he is presented in Hebrews chapter 11 as one that believed and diligently sought God. So last time we were in Genesis chapter 18, where he had visitors that were actually angels. He didn't realize it at first, but he offered them hospitality. At the same time, God spoke with him, and God told him that a year from that point, he would have his first child. That would be the first one that would begin to be the fulfillment of God's promise to Abraham that he would be the father of many nations. And Sarah laughed when she overheard that, and God called her out on that, and she said, "Oh, I didn't laugh." And he said, "Yes, you did." And then in verse 16, it says, "And the men rose up from thence and looked toward Sodom, and Abraham went with them to bring them on the way. And the Lord said, Shall I hide from Abraham that thing which I do, seeing that Abraham shall surely become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him? For I know him, that he will command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of the Lord, to do justice and judgment, that the Lord may bring upon Abraham that which he hath spoken of him." So that was God's thinking, and now we have God speaking to Abraham. The Lord said, "Because the cry of Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and because their sin is very grievous, I will go down now and see whether they have done altogether according to the cry of it which has come unto me, and if not, I will know." And the men turned their faces from thence and went toward Sodom, but Abraham stood yet before the Lord. And again, God is spirit, so the men were the angels in human form, but God is spirit, and God and Abraham are talking together here. "And Abraham drew near and said, Wilt thou also destroy the righteous with the wicked?" So he's asking a question of God. He knows that his nephew Lot is in Sodom, and God's intending to destroy the place because of the wickedness of the people. So he's asking this question of God, kind of picking his brain to see what God intends to do. He doesn't have any scriptures to go by, so he has to ask God directly about these things. So he asks God, saying, "Wilt thou destroy the righteous with the wicked? Peradventure there be 50 righteous within the city. Wilt thou also destroy and not spare the place for the 50 righteous that are therein? That be far from thee to do after this manner, to slay the righteous with the wicked, and that the righteous should be as the wicked. That be far from thee. That wouldn't be like you. As far as I know you, God, that be far from thee. Shall not the judge of all the earth do right?" And that's a title that he gave to God, the judge of all the earth. And God is the one who has the right to judge all people, right? He created them all. He's the one that sets the standard for what is righteous. So he's the one that is the judge of all the earth. "Shall not the judge of all the earth do right? And the Lord said, If I find in Sodom 50 righteous within the city, then I will spare all the place for their sakes." So he said, no matter how awful the others are, If there are 50 righteous people in that city, then I will not destroy the whole city. I will let the unrighteous continue to be unrighteous. But if there's 50 in that city, I will spare the whole place. And Abraham answered and said, Behold, now I have taken upon me to speak unto the Lord, which am but dust and ashes. And this word Lord here is not the word Jehovah, because you see it doesn't have all capital letters in the text. It's the word Adonai, which would be a title of respect, saying you're my superior. It's like when you confess Jesus Christ as Lord. You're not confessing him as God or as Jehovah. You're confessing him as your superior, the one who's above you and above all others as well. So Abraham is speaking unto the Lord. In this verse, that's the word that's used. Peradventure, just maybe if, there shall lack 5 of the 50 righteous. Wilt thou destroy all the city for lack of 5? And he said, If I find there 40 and 5, I will not destroy it. And he spake unto him yet again, and said, Peradventure, there shall be 40 found there. And he said, I will not do it for 40's sake. Now, what Abraham's doing here, I don't believe he's chiseling God or whittling him down. He just wants to find out what the parameters are. He's trying to find out what the minimum number of righteous people would be required in the city for it not to be destroyed, because he knows Lot's there, and he doesn't know if there are any other righteous people in the city besides Lot himself. But he wants to find out what the deal is. What's God's intention? So he's picking God's brain on this, so to speak. Verse 30, and he said, Oh, let not the Lord be angry, and I will speak. Peradventure, there shall 30 be found there. And he said, I will not do it if I find 30 there. And he said, Behold, now I have taken upon me to speak unto the Lord. Peradventure, there shall be 20 found there. And he said, I will not destroy it for 20's sake. Now again, anything that God says now, God will stick to. And Abraham knows that. If God will say it, he will stand by what he says. So he's trying to get these words from God. And he said, Oh, let not the Lord be angry, and I will speak yet but this once. Peradventure 10 shall be found there. And he said, I will not destroy it for 10's sake. And the Lord went his way. He's not taking any more questions at this point. And he went his way as soon as he had left communing with Abraham, and Abraham returned unto his place. Now the next chapter, chapter 19, I'm not going to read the whole thing with you, but it shows that there were two angels that went to Sodom. Lot was there, and he invited those two, what he thought were men, into his home. And he fed them, offered them hospitality, and the angels told them what was going to happen. And the men of Sodom surrounded Lot's house and said, Bring out those men that came in there, because we want to get to know them, and in a bad way. And Lot said, Oh, no, don't do that, because he had extended hospitality to these strangers, and that was an important thing. It was his obligation to protect them. He offered them his own two daughters rather than these strangers that he had taken the responsibility to protect. But they said, No, we want those men. And the angels, they smote everybody with blindness, so they couldn't even find the door of the house. And the angel said to Lot, We're going to get you out of here. Who else do you have in the city? Lot had his wife, and he had two of his daughters that lived with him, and he had two other daughters that were married. So Lot went to the houses where his other two daughters lived with their husbands to let him know God's going to destroy the place. We have to get out of here. And his sons-in-law, it said they thought that Lot was just mocking or pulling a prank or making a joke or something like that. They didn't believe him, and they wouldn't go with him. So the angels took Lot. They actually had to grab him by the hands and his wife and his daughters and say, We're leaving. And they said, Now don't look back. God's going to destroy the city. Don't look back. But his wife did look back, and it said that she became a pillar of salt. So only Lot and his two daughters were successfully rescued from Sodom. And then it tells about Lot's two daughters thinking that they're the last three people left in the world and they have to repopulate the planet. So they get their father drunk, and each one on different nights sleeps with their father and gets pregnant by him. And that seems a little scandalous, but that's what happened. And then you have the Ammonites and the Moabites came from those two daughters of Lot. So moving on to chapter 20. It says in verse 1, "And Abraham journeyed from thence toward the south country," that's the Negeb, the southern part of what would be the land of Canaan, "and he dwelled between Kadesh and Shur, and sojourned in Gerar." Now Gerar is a city of the Philistines. But he went there with all his flocks and herds and his family and all his servants. "And Abraham said of Sarah his wife, 'She is my sister,' and Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah." So Sarah's 90 years old at this point, but apparently still attractive, a beautiful woman, that the king wanted her to be one of his own wives. So he sent and had one of his servants take Sarah and bring her to his house. Verse 3 says, "But God came to Abimelech in a dream by night, and said to him, 'Behold, thou art but a dead man, for the woman which thou hast taken, for she is a man's wife.'" So Abimelech didn't know this, but God appeared to him in that dream and told him that. "But Abimelech had not come near her." So she had been taken to his house, but he hadn't physically touched her. "And he said, 'Lord, wilt thou slay also a righteous nation? Said he not unto me, She is my sister? And she, even she herself, said, He is my brother. In the integrity of my heart and innocency of my hands have I done this.' And God said unto him in a dream, 'Yea, I know that thou didst this in the integrity of thy heart, for I also withheld thee from sinning against me, therefore suffered I thee not to touch her.'" He said, "I knew this, and that's why I did not allow you to touch her. This meeting that we're having was to prevent that from happening. If you had touched her, you would be in big trouble. And if you do touch her, you will be in big trouble." Verse 7 says, "Now therefore restore the man his wife." Give her back to her husband. "For he is a prophet." Isn't that something? He is a prophet. Now, Abraham is not the first of the prophets, but I believe this may be the first place that the word prophet is used in the Bible. I'm quite sure that it is. If I hit control and click on that and do a search, yeah, this is the first place in the Bible that the word prophet is used. Now, we know that Abel was a prophet because Jesus Christ said so, right? And we know Enoch spoke for God, and we know that Noah was a preacher of righteousness. But the word prophet is first used in the book of Genesis regarding Abraham. It also said that in Psalm 105 that we read. We'll look at that in a few minutes. But Abraham is a prophet, and God tells Abimelech, "Now therefore restore the man his wife, for he is a prophet, and he shall pray for thee, and thou shalt live. And if thou restore her not, know that thou shalt surely die. Dying thou shalt die, and all that are thine." So not only will you die, but all your family will die if you do not restore this woman to her husband. Therefore Abimelech, by the way, Abimelech, I don't know if it's a name or a title, because Abimelech means Melech is father. Melech means king in Hebrew. So it really means my father is king, or that he was a father king. He was the father of a family and he was a king. Because there's another Abimelech that Isaac deals with, and there's another Abimelech who's a son of Gideon down the road who makes himself king. But anyway, Abimelech rose early in the morning, didn't waste any time, and he called all his servants and told all these things in their ears, and the men were sore afraid. They knew they were in big trouble with God, the God that had created the heavens and the earth. Then Abimelech called Abraham and said unto him, "What hast thou done unto us? And what have I offended thee that thou hast brought on me and on my kingdom a great sin? Thou hast done deeds unto me that ought not to be done." So he's reproving Abraham. Now, question I would have, we see that Abimelech reproved Abraham. Question is, does God reprove Abraham? I'd be more interested in that, because people can think somebody's done something wrong and deserves reproof. But I always look at, who does God reprove? Verse 10 says, "And Abimelech said unto Abraham, What sawest thou that thou hast done this thing? And Abraham said, I'll tell you, because I thought, surely the fear of God is not in this place, and they will slay me for my wife's sake. And yet indeed she is my sister. She's the daughter of my father, but not the daughter of my mother. And she became my wife. At the time there was no law against that. And it came to pass, when God caused me to wander from my father's house, that I said unto her, This is thy kindness which thou shalt show unto me. At every place whither we shall come, say of me, He is my brother." So it could potentially save Abraham's life. Plus, if he didn't die and someone took his wife, he could appeal to God and God could have her restored, which happened twice, right? It happened with the king of Egypt and it happened here. In both cases, the king was smitten with Sarah and wanted her to be his wife, but God interceded, and God is the one that reproved the kings. "And Abimelech took sheep and oxen and men servants and women servants and gave them unto Abraham and restored him Sarah his wife. And Abimelech said, Behold, my land is before thee, dwell where it pleaseth thee. And unto Sarah he said, Behold, I have given thy brother," and he calls Abraham her brother. This is reproof to Sarah. "Behold, I have given thy brother 1,000 pieces of silver. Behold, he is to thee a covering of the eyes, and to all that are with thee, and with all other." Thus she was reproved by the king. Now, there are some different ways that this verse is translated, and I want to look at one of them that puts it in a different way. The ESV has, "To Sarah he said, Behold, I have given your brother 1,000 pieces of silver. It is a sign of your innocence in the eyes of all who are with you, and before everyone you are vindicated." Uses the word vindicated instead of reproved. And he said, this will prove your innocence, that you and I did not have any relationships with each other, so you did not commit adultery by having sex with somebody else while you're married to this man. So there's a few of them that have the word vindicated in there. The ISV does also, and so does the LEB. There's a few that have it that way, that she was vindicated. Now, I want to show you that Psalm 105 that talks about God reproving the kings for the sake of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Psalm 105. Now, look at verse 13. And this is talking about Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And it says, "When they went from one nation to another, from one kingdom to another people, he suffered," or allowed, "no man to do them wrong. Yea, he reproved kings for their sakes, saying, Touch not mine anointed, and do my prophets no harm." So God never reproved Abraham for saying that Sarah was his sister. I've heard people do that. I've heard people say that Abraham had fear in his life, and he did that because he was afraid. God doesn't say so in the scriptures. So when it comes to these men of God that God honors so much in his word, and I don't think it's the case because, you know, the people of Israel were the writers of this. God was the author of this. When his people were wrong, he said so, and often in very harsh terms, okay? So it doesn't matter if it's one of his own people. If God says somebody was wrong, you know that they were wrong. If people say somebody's wrong, I look to see, well, what does God say? God says he reproved the kings. He didn't reprove Abraham or Sarah. He reproved the kings for their sakes. So myself, I want to agree with God on this and not point any fingers at Abraham as if he did something wrong. Now, back to Genesis chapter 20, the end of the chapter, verse 17. "So Abraham prayed unto God, and God healed Abimelech and his wife and his maidservants, and they bare children. For the Lord had fast closed up all the wombs of the house of Abimelech because of Sarah, Abraham's wife. Some very interesting things in verse 17. Abraham prayed unto God, and God healed Abimelech. This word healed, Rapha. A lot of us are familiar with Jehovah Rapha, I am the Lord that healeth thee. This is the first place in the Bible that the word heal or healed is used. Interesting. I don't know if there were no healings done by God before this time, but this is the first place that the Hebrew word for heal and I believe the English word are used in the Bible. Now, also in this section, in verse 7, where God says to Abimelech, restore the man and his wife, for he is a prophet, and he shall pray for thee. I'm going to do a search on the word pray. This is the first place in the Bible that the word for pray is used when it comes to praying to God. Again, I don't know it's the first time anybody prayed to God, but it's the first time that this word for pray is used in the Bible. There is another word for pray that's used prior to this where a man is talking to another person and says, I pray thee, would you do this? It would be our equivalent of please. Like, would you please do this? It's a different word from this word. Verse 7, this word for pray is the Hebrew word palal, means to intervene, interpose, mediate, judge, intercede, to pray. It's usually in the context of a person praying to God, and most often praying to God on behalf of somebody else or making a request to God. So this is the first time in the Bible that that word is used. It's also the first time the word to heal is used in this context. So in verse 17, so Abraham prayed unto God. That's the second time in the Bible that the word for pray is used. And it's the first time the word heal is used. So there are some that say the teaching that had been going around a number of years ago, don't pray for the sick. It's not going to work. You have to minister to them. And according to this, praying resulted in healing. Okay? Abraham prayed for Abimelech, and God healed Abimelech and his wife and his maidservants, and they bare children. So prayer for healing is a very valid thing according to the word of God. And this is a prayer that was directed by God. God told Abimelech that Abraham would pray for him. And then Abraham did that, and then God responded to that prayer by healing him, healing his wife, healing his female servants, and they were able to have children. If he had not prayed, they would never have children. Abimelech would have died, and none of the women in his family would be able to have any more children after this point, and they would have come to the end of the line. Because it says in verse 18, for the Lord had fast closed up all the wombs of the house of Abimelech because of Sarah, Abraham's wife. And it would not be enough for the king to pray for himself at this point. He said, Abraham is the one who will pray for you. Okay, Abraham was the one that would have otherwise lost his wife over this. So he had his wife restored to him, and then Abraham prayed to God's direction, and God answered that prayer. Another interesting thing that happened is, if you go to the next verse, is in chapter 21, verse 1, it says, and the Lord visited Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did unto Sarah as he had spoken, for Sarah conceived and bare Abraham a son in his old age at the set time of which God had spoken to him. If there were no chapter division here, it would be more obvious that when Abraham prayed for Abimelech and his household, and all the women in the household were now able to have children, Sarah was now able to have children. Sarah had been in Abimelech's household because she'd been taken to be one of his wives, and she got the benefit of that prayer. You see, they were all able to have children, and now Sarah was able to have children. It says the Lord visited Sarah, sat down, had a cup of tea. But the word visited, pakad, is to attend to muster, number, reckon, visit. Punish, appoint, look after, care for. So it means he was directly involved. And this, I believe, is the first place that the word Hebrew word for visited is used in the Bible. A lot of firsts in this section here. But he visited Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did unto Sarah as he had spoken. I think it's interesting that so many of the great miracles that you read of in the Word of God didn't just happen out of the blue. There were words that preceded them, okay? God said that this was going to happen. Actually, he said it 25 years before this time, right? When Abraham was 75 years old, that all the families in the earth would be blessed in him and in his seed, okay? 25 years went by, he didn't have any seed, but he had the promise. The words preceded the thing that God said would happen. So this records the time that God brought his spoken word to pass. And we saw this developing. First, God said it's going to happen, okay? And then Abraham has a son by way of Sarah's handmaid Hagar and thinks that, okay, we're making some progress here. Then he finds out that God would bless Ishmael, but he would not be the one concerning the promise of his seed, that he would have a son by way of Sarah, even though she was past childbearing age. And Abraham was getting very old himself. And then God told them when it was going to happen. Okay, first that it was going to happen, how it was going to happen with Sarah and not with Hagar, and then when it was going to happen. And now God visited Sarah as he had said. And the Lord did unto Sarah as he had spoken. The most valuable thing that you can have is a promise of God in words. If you have the words of God and you believe those words, the thing that God promised will come to pass. You can enjoy knowing that it's going to come to pass from the words. The words are solid. They're ironclad. God cannot lie. He has to do what he has said he will do. Okay? If you have the words and you believe those words, the thing that God says, he will always perform. As far as the timing of it, that's going to be up to him. But he's going to do it, you see? For Sarah conceived, verse 2, and bare Abraham a son in his old age at the set time of which God had spoken to him. And Abraham called the name of his son that was born unto him, whom Sarah bare to him, Isaac, which means, again, laughter. And Abraham circumcised his son Isaac, being 8 days old, as God had commanded him. Now, God had told him about the circumcision over a year before that, okay? And God didn't have to tell him a second time because Abraham, as a servant of God, made it his job to remember the things God had already told him and to make sure that he carried those things out. If God would tell him to do a specific thing, he would do it immediately. If God said, this is something that you must do every time, like every time there's a child in your household, when they're 8 days old, you must circumcise them. So God didn't have to tell Abraham that again. He had already told him. It was Abraham's job to remember that and then to carry it out at the proper time. So he did it as God had commanded him. And Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born unto him. And Sarah said, God hath made me to laugh, and all that hear will laugh with me. And she said, who would have said unto Abraham that Sarah should have given suck? For I have borne him a son in his old age. She's 90 years old, and she's breastfeeding this baby. She said, who would have thought that would have happened? But God healed Sarah, and he gave her like a restored youthfulness that she could take a baby to term, have a natural birth, and then feed the baby, even though she was that age. So God did great things for her. And the child grew and was weaned. So when a child is weaned, that's when the child is able to not only stop breastfeeding, but also able to function on his own. Like it talks about Samuel being weaned when he was a boy and his mother took him to Eli the high priest. Samuel was able to function without his mother there. He would be able to calm himself if he's upset. There's a psalm that says, I have quieted myself as a child that is weaned of his mother. My soul is that of a weaned child. So part of raising a child will be teaching them and training them to the point where they don't make a fuss all the time and need that constant attention to keep them out of trouble, but they can conduct themselves in an orderly fashion and that they can calm themselves down if they get upset. It's a good skill to have, to be able to calm yourself down so that your mind is quiet and peaceful on the inside. Verse 9 says, "And Sarah saw the son of Hagar the Egyptian, which she had borne unto Abraham, mocking," or laughing. So she saw Ishmael laughing or making fun of Isaac or something like that, but it bothered her. Verse 10, "Wherefore she said unto Abraham, cast out this bondwoman and her son, for the son of this bondwoman shall not be heir with my son, even with Isaac." So it seemed to disturb her that Ishmael was carrying on as if he's the big shot and Isaac's just his little brother. Says, no, Ishmael doesn't enter into this at all. You need to send him away. Verse 11, "And the thing was very grievous in Abraham's sight because of his son," because he loved Ishmael. It was his son. Sarah wasn't crazy about him, but Abraham, he loved his son, and it was grievous to him to have to send him away. But God gets involved here, "And God said unto Abraham, let it not be grievous in thy sight because of the lad," referring to Ishmael, "and because of thy bondwoman. In all that Sarah hath said unto thee, hearken unto her voice, for in Isaac shall thy seed be called." Okay? Now, if you remember, Adam got in trouble for obeying the voice of his wife Eve, right? Why? Because she was influenced by the devil. But in this case, God told Abraham, what Sarah said to you is actually right, and I want you to do what she said, because it's in Isaac that thy seed shall be called. Thy seed, which would be like the seed of the woman that will crush the head of the serpent, it's going to be through Isaac, and it's not going to be through Ishmael. In Isaac shall thy seed be called. And also, of the son of the bondwoman will I make a nation, because he is thy seed. He's your child, and I'm going to bless him because of you, Abraham. And I'm going to make him a nation. So he's going to be okay. When you send him away, he's going to be all right. I'm going to make a great big nation out of him, and I'm going to bless him. But the promised seed is going to come through Isaac. "And Abraham rose up early in the morning." You always see this with Abraham. If God tells him something late in the day, he gets up early in the morning and carries it out. If it's earlier in the day, he'll take care of it the same day. Like the circumcision, he did it that day. This one, probably later in the evening, they're having this big party for Isaac's weaning. And he hears from Sarah. God tells him what to do. So he gets up early in the morning and does exactly what God said. "So Abraham rose up early in the morning and took bread and a bottle of water." And that wouldn't be a little plastic bottle. That would be a goat skin filled with water, a good supply. "And he gave it unto Hagar, putting it on her shoulder, and the child," who would have been 14 years old at this point. So he's not like a little boy. He's a teenager. "And he sent her away." Well, actually, he'd be older than that because Isaac is weaned. Ishmael would have been 14 years old when Isaac was born. Okay, so he'd be a little older than that, maybe a later teen, but still not quite an adult. He's still called a child. "So he sent her away, and she departed and wandered in the wilderness of Beersheba. And the water was spent in the bottle." They drank it all up. "And she cast the child under one of the shrubs." So she found some shade to put Ishmael, probably getting dehydrated at this point, and she just figured he's going to die. "And she went and sat her down over against him, a good way off, as it were a bow shot," like as far as you could shoot an arrow. "For she said, let me not see the death of the child," because that would have been devastating to her. "And she sat over against him and lift up her voice and wept. And God heard the voice of the lad. And the angel of God called to Hagar out of heaven and said unto her, what aileth thee, Hagar? What's the matter? Fear not, for God hath heard the voice of the lad where he is. Arise, lift up the lad, and hold him in thine hand, for I will make him a great nation. And if that's going to happen, he's not going to die in the desert here. I will make him a great nation. And God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water. So that well had been there all along, she just didn't see it. But there, a source of water. And she went and filled the bottle with water and gave the lad drink. And God was with the lad. So this is talking about what happened over time now. And he grew and dwelt in the wilderness and became an archer. Be shooting bows and arrows and hunting. And he dwelt in the wilderness of Paran, and his mother took him a wife out of the land of Egypt. So that has to do with Ishmael. Now the next thing that happens is Abimelech, the king of Gerar, has some discussions with Abraham. I'm going to just pass over that because it doesn't pertain to our topic as much. But in chapter 22, verse 1, it says, "And it came to pass after these things that God did tempt Abraham." And the word tempt is to test, try, prove, tempt, assay, put to the proof, or test. So what's happening here is God is going to test Abraham's level of obedience by telling him to do something and seeing if he will actually do it, okay? So God did, I would say, test Abraham or tried him and said unto him, Abraham, and he said, "Behold, here I am." And he said, "Take now thy son, thine only son Isaac, whom thou lovest, and get thee into the land of Moriah, and offer him there for a burnt offering upon one of the mountains, which I will tell thee of." Now, the only other place that the word Moriah is used in the Bible relates to the place where Solomon built the temple. It was on Mount Moriah. But this is the land of Moriah, so there are probably a number of mountains in that region. But it would have been in that same area where the temple would have been built many years later. But God would tell him which of the mountains that he would go to and offer Isaac as a burnt offering. And Abraham rose up early in the morning and saddled his ass and took two of his young men with him and Isaac his son and clave the wood for the burnt offering and rose up and went unto the place of which God had told him. Again, he did it when? Early in the morning. So God told him to do it that previous day, probably later in the day. He got up early in the morning, didn't waste any time, got everything ready, got the wood and stuff, and they started going. Then on the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place afar off. And Abraham said unto his young men, "Abide ye here with the ass, and I and the lad will go yonder and worship and come again to you." So he's speaking as if he's going to go sacrifice his son, and then both of them would return again. Okay, why would that be? Well, let's take a look at what it says in Hebrews 11 regarding this. So Hebrews 11 and in verse 17, it says, "By faith," or by believing, "Abraham, when he was tried," okay, that would be the Greek word, sometimes translated tempted, sometimes translated tried. And here it's translated correctly as tried. So Abraham, when he was tried or tested, offered up Isaac. And he that received the promises offered up his only begotten son, of whom it was said that in Isaac shall thy seed be called. So think about this. If God gave him this son, and said, "In Isaac shall thy seed be called," and then offer him for a burnt offering, how can you reconcile those two things? If he would kill his son, then how could his son be the one to produce the seed? That would be like the stars of heaven. But that's what God told him to do, to offer up his only begotten son, of whom it was said that in Isaac shall thy seed be called. Verse 19 gives the answer. Accounting, or reckoning, considering, that God was able to raise him up, even from the dead, from whence also he received him in a figure. Okay? Now, this is all the time we have to look at this tonight. So next week, we'll look at the rest of the record of Abraham offering Isaac as a burnt offering. because there's a lot to that that's very important. So we're going to look at that next week. Okay?